Some artists depict the famed Oracle of Delphi seated on a tripod. One of the paintings shows her enfolded in clouds of mysterious vapors that connected her to the god Apollo, like clouds of steam from a geothermal vent or in a steam room. Another painting shows wisps of vapor wafting up to her as though from a smoldering fire or a blown-out candle. In another painting, you can't even see her. She is behind a door with people waiting. One of the people is listening at the door. Were the vapors around the Oracle of Delphi visible as depicted in the paintings, or were they in the realm of the invisible? How did they keep them contained? Why wasn't the priest who was listening for her words affected? Sibyl Pythia Oracle. Were the women who held this mantle all of these? And what's the difference? Let's see what we can find out next on the Whispering Gallery. Welcome to the shadow-filled halls of the Whispering Gallery, where echoes of prophecies uttered in Apollo's temple in Delphi, Greece, whisper like dry autumn leaves. After the last episode, I needed another round of clarification on some of the things that were introduced. Tonight, we talk tales of the famous and trusted Oracle of Delphi, the Greek woman who could talk to the god Apollo. I'm glad you're here with me for this special mini-episode. Dark shadows seem to creep in the story of the women in the role of Pythia. Some of the art showing the Oracle of Delphi is on Facebook and Instagram. I had questions at the end of the first episode. It's been a long time since we recorded. Like, what is behind all of these titles given to her? They're not exactly synonyms, but they're related. The words Sibyl, Pythia, Oracle are tossed around like a leafy salad, but they are different. A Sibyl is a prophetess, or even an oracle. This would be like the word artist being a general category, but people under the umbrella of this work in specific mediums like oil paint, graphite, clay, etc. Sibyl is the broader category. A step forward in getting more specific, we could have a painter, going with the art reference. So after the Sibyl as the category or umbrella, we focus on what a prophetess is. The women in this role would have been considered a teacher of sorts, or it seems, have had some respect as the mouthpiece or the one who pronounced the will of the god Apollo, even if it came out confused, which we'll talk about in another minute, and needed further interpretation. So we have Sibyl and prophetess speaking the will of the god Apollo. And key to the whole topic is, of course, the word oracle, the Oracle of Delphi. It's mystical sounding, but kind of familiar to me, at least in Utah, where Oracle Software has offices. They're actually headquartered in Texas. So oracle belongs in the category of divination, to know what the future holds, which we still seek today. Not that I'm always consulting my magic eight ball. Wouldn't it be nice if that had all the answers? When was the last time you had a really good fortune from a fortune cookie? We're still looking for answers about the future, even for a mysterious positive fortune when we crack the fortune cookie open. And even though they are generally lame, at the end of the meal, we crack those suckers open hoping to find good news. The oracle would pray to the god Apollo on behalf of petitioners who came to Delphi. When the Pythia spoke the words of Apollo, they were interpreted by prophets into hexameter. Oracles were often associated with a place. The oracles or the women themselves weren't exactly common. The Oracle of Delphi would speak Apollo's words back in answer, like a translation tool, but with answers coming in straight from the supernatural, instead of, say, a database of indexed information. In this case, this was as close as they could get to a direct connection to the god Apollo. The Greco-Roman pantheon included the influential god Apollo. Legend said he slew a python in Delphi, thus the Pythia relation. He was known for integrity, truth, and prophecy. How would one find a job like this today? What would the keyword search on Indeed or LinkedIn be? Pythia. This is the job title. Fun fact, they once had three Pythia working at once to cover the demand. That's kind of a whole industry. People traveling to ask questions, need a place to stay, food to eat, goats as mentioned, water, stuff they forgot like a toothbrush, haha. So I imagine keeping the role of the Pythia going so the Oracle of Delphi could remain a thing, that must have been pretty important to the immediate economy. Definitions are all good, but what would it have been like for the woman in the role of Pythia? After purification rituals, knowing when the god talked through them, they were not making sense. Would you be praying your ability to think straight would come back? I think I would. Would people question you, look at you like you were crazy? Or would they respect her and back off, as protected by the god Apollo himself, unless the goat didn't shudder or the gases that allowed communication overwhelmed her? How long did she sit there hoping Apollo was listening and would get back to her? How long did it take the vapors to start making her feel sick and not able to think straight? Was the communication considered a blissful experience or terrifying? Was she just sitting alone in the dark, starting to feel off, and that meant the god was showing up? Scientific American takes a stab at part of the answer in their article from August 8th of 2001, Gaseous Emissions at Oracle of Delphi Entrance the Pythia. The scientists say that hydrocarbon gases from bituminous limestone probably brought on the Pythia's trance. In fact, the team found ethane, methane, and ethylene in spring water located near the oracle. This was from scientificamerican.com. Ethylene, ethane, and methane. That's a rough way to go into a trance state. Depending on what she was exposed to or what was mixed together, this could have very well been why they had to rotate women in and out of the position, and why there's a record of the Pythia dying, being blamed, of course, on the uncooperative, non-shuddering goat. The New Jersey Department of Health fact sheets were very helpful in understanding what the ethylene, ethane, and methane can do to a person. The following is from EPA.gov. Global Methane Initiative, Importance of Methane. Quote, methane, CH4, is a hydrocarbon that is a primary component of natural gas. Methane is also a greenhouse gas, GHG, so its presence in the atmosphere affects the Earth's temperature and climate system. Unquote. The women working as Pythia would have suffered from confusion, loss of coordination and judgment, headache, dizziness, weakness, fatigue, nausea and vomiting, increased breathing rate, loss of consciousness, lightheadedness, and possible suffocation. The trainer of a new Pythia may have said, "You get up there and sit in that tripod right now. Yes, I know it's uncomfortable. Okay, find a position that's stable. Comfort doesn't matter because you don't want to fall off that thing. All settled? Let me arrange the pillows below you. Why? I think the priest is calling me. Good luck, dear." Was the priest a type of lifeguard? If he heard her words interrupted by a thud, did he go in to retrieve her? I don't know what long-term effects or intentionally exposing the Pythia to these materials in gas form caused. Did it also irritate skin or nasal passages? In some of the paintings, like the two by J. Malchevsky in 1917, the women working as Pythia look super rosy and alert, really healthy. So as discussed, Delphi is in Greece, approximately 6 miles from the Gulf of Corinth, which was shut down by Theodosius around 385 CE, and in 1987, Delphi became a UNESCO World Heritage Site. This was as far as I was going to take my questions. I took our foster long-haired black and tan dachshund Max to the vet yesterday, and they were really backed up. We waited about 3 hours, so we listened to the Ancients podcast episode on the Oracle of Delphi. If you really want more answers on the Oracle of Delphi, I highly recommend this episode. It was done really well. I now have some studio news updates to share. I'll be attending the Portland Retro Gaming Expo with my husband from October 14th through the 16th. We'll be walking the floor and attending lectures. I'll be giving out our cute free skull pins to help you get ready for Halloween. DM me if you're going to be there and I'll make sure you get one. Speaking of video games, if you want to get into the retro gaming vibe with some crazy video game lore, check out Season 3, Episode 5 and 6 for Phantom of the Arcade, Part 1 and 2, published in the summer of 2021. I take a deep dive into urban lore about the mythical arcade game, and we get a smattering of tech and video game art details to boot. I apologize for the occasional barking, especially on the last episode. It got my dogs barking while I was reviewing it. Since this was an older episode, we have some extra dogs running around in the background. The Whispering Gallery podcast is a dog-friendly studio, and this summer I helped start a 501c3 nonprofit called the Rocky Mountain Dachshund Rescue. We're based out of Salt Lake City, Utah, and you can learn more at RockyMountainDachshundRescue.com or find us on social media. Speaking of social media, look for the Whispering Gallery on Instagram and Facebook. I'll be updating the art over the next few days. Plus, there's a link to a great Etsy shop, Skrilla Dog Designs, where you can buy a Whispering Gallery t-shirt. It's got great retro 70s lettering with our skull logo in purple. It was very fun. If you like your t-shirts loose, size up. Thank you to Free Sound and Skrilla Dog Designs for designing the t-shirt. I recently told a couple of spooky stories on Jim Harold's Campfire podcast. One was a ghost story. The second one was what he calls a head scratcher. And that was about the episode on Mummy Brown, where there was a bit of synchronicity going on. Let me give you the gist of it, because the story is kind of interesting. What happened was I was watching TV shows about mummies and Egypt and pyramids, all the things I could get in front of me as part of my research, as well as books and websites. Once the episode was released, my husband had been out to our little free library, which is out by the road, and that allows us to share books with the community and they can trade books. What happened was he came back in the house with a book with a picture of Ramses on it. And it was a larger book, a program for a traveling museum exhibit. And this was from way back. So, I think I was 12 and my parents took me to it. It was just very interesting to have the synchronicity of that part of Egypt showing up on my kitchen table as I was just releasing the bit on Mummy Brown. And I was very into the mummies and Egyptian art as a kid. I had my piano books in a bag that had printing on it, Egyptian hieroglyphic art from the museum, of course. So anyway, it was just kind of a synchronicity, all those things coming together after I finished that episode. You can decide if there was a supernatural push to have it all come together or just things running into each other as part of life as things go. Thank you for being part of the Whispering Gallery community. Remember to keep your flashlight close and your spooky stories closer when visiting the Whispering Gallery. Talk to you soon with episode 2. Stay safe and enjoy the spooky side of October.